Council corrects the chicken bylaw, letting you keep your property rights, while in Ottawa, Trudeau decides to take those rights away. This is Penhold Talk Radio. And we're back. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Brian Constantine. I am here, as always, with my co-host, Michael Rowland.
Hello, hello.
And it's just the two of us. sorry, you got to put up with just us. We do have more guests scheduled, so you can look forward to that. Apparently, they haven't been scared off from last week, so that's good. And thank you again to Mary Argeau for coming on. Especially in this kind of political climate and cultural climate, there's more than a few people looking to get that kind of soundbite, that hit piece, out there. And it doesn't have. You might think that's crazy to think about. You know, after all, we're just Penhold Talk Radio. Who really listens to this show? just think about how many people have been caught by their like 9-year-old tweets. Or tweets from like 9 years ago.
Oh yeah, and some obscure conversation they have with somebody, or something from years ago. It doesn't take much, and someone will track it down and use it to their advantage.
Yeah, I don't think Argeau has said anything that would like disqualify him from say the PC party head when he runs for it in you know. 5 years, 10 years down the road.
Yeah, I think he played it pretty safe.
Yeah,
our interview and discussion was not too too controversial.
Not yet, I think he'll be good. I don't think there's going to be any sound bites that anyone's going to be able to scrub from our interview. Unlike say, you know, it's not like he was accusing a Jewish MP of standing with swastikas. nothing quite like that. That's. Yes, that did happen. That was our prime minister, but not our mayor. That was the prime minister saying stuff like that just this last week. And that is definitely a soundbite that's gone around. And didn't have to wait 9 years for that. But nope, we're good. We're moving on from that. I'll just leave that little right there. If you want more, I'm sure you've heard of it, but as always, sources on penholdtalkradio.ca. If you want to see a prime minister accuse a Jewish MP of being a Nazi sympathizer, that's our leader. And I say it jokingly, in a jovial manner, because I don't know how else to say it. You just shake your head in despair. Otherwise,
you laugh while the world burns. How else do you get through it?
That's right. All right. So moving on to local news. Penhold Town Council had another council meeting this last week, and apparently they don't have any other local reporters. Before, you know, you have the NSFAL province in there, and now that's no more. Now you have what I think everything is kind of conglomerated into. Mountain View, I think is.
Yeah, the Mountain View paper, whatever.
Yeah.
Now I can't remember what it's called, but.
Yeah, it covers everything.
And then RD News Now will sometimes pull in some of the Penhold stuff
in there. Mountain View Today. We used to have a Innisfail reporter actually at the meetings covering it, but no longer. So perhaps we can fill in that void a little bit. So I was watching their most recent one, or most recent council meeting, not their podcast. Yeah, our quality is much bigger, much better than their video and audio quality on their council meetings. They covered a few news and a few things worth highlighting. First thing I will point out. Is that there was news on the DQ.
Is it finally getting close? Are we getting there?
It's getting there. It was dropped in the meeting that they're perhaps aiming for April. So a couple more months.
Well, it's been painful watching that building.
So what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for a DQ?
I don't know that I care that much, but it just, it really is painful watching that building just inch along. It's, I want to see it open. And I appreciate having some variety around.
Yeah.
Having something different available. I hope it does all right, because small town, you never know what's going to survive and what's not. It's pretty difficult, especially with those fast food chains. But
yeah, no, it's definitely, I think it'll, I'm quite optimistic. I think for yeah. It's hitting a niche that is not covered in Penhold.
Yeah, we really don't have anything in that kind of category. Yeah. The only fast food we've got is Subway and Tim Hortons that don't line up. It's not the same thing.
No, it's not quite the same. Yeah. Yeah. At least with DQ, you know, we have your more traditional burgers and now ice cream.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a little bit different category. I think they're going to do well. I homeschool my kids. Otherwise, it might cost me more money. I can imagine a lot of parents being asked for a few extra bucks for their walk home from school.
No kidding. Until that new school gets built, when the elementary kids are walking across the highway and right past the DQ, I feel like their afternoon business might do well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I can easily see this being quite a successful little location. I'm sure to spend a few dollars there, no doubt. So April. So there's a little bit of breaking news. Hopefully in April. I also saw on Facebook that they just started send us your resumes.
Right. I heard that too. So yeah, if they're looking towards hiring, they must be actually rolling along. So. Yeah.
And just to throw us off track right away, I think the world would be a better place if everyone had to do a stint in a fast food joint when they're growing up. What do you think?
I don't know. I never did fast food. I did a couple of grocery stores.
That's pretty comparable, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a comparable type scenario.
Did you have direct customer interaction?
I primarily work stocking shelves. So yeah, you're dealing with customers, not as a cashier, but as somebody who's in the aisles the whole day.
Yeah. I did the A&W on South Point for a number of years, and it definitely gives you appreciation for later on in life when you go to the fast food place and the order is taking longer or they screw up.
Yeah.
So it gives you patience, but I think it also instills a lot of good, it's usually the first entry into the workforce. It provides a nice structure for getting those simple tasks and seeing the kind of the flow of how a team works together to get things done. But overall, my biggest thing is that I think a lot of people would be a lot more patient with people in fast food if they had actually been behind the counter and working the grill during a lunch hour. Like, it can be crazy back there.
Well, I think that applies to any kind of customer service type industry.
Yeah.
If you spend time working in a grocery store, working in a fast food place, working in a retail environment, you learn to sympathize a little more with those responsible for keeping those places going. Mm-hmm. So I agree.
Just my opinion. Yeah. We don't have any like mandatory military conscription, mandatory fast food,
Canadian mandatory retail fast food work.
That's right.
There we go.
All right. The last council meeting, they also, honored a few members of the, Penhold Volunteer Fire Department. I'm guessing they didn't do this last year, but they honored Firefighter of the Year and Officer of the Year for the last 2 years.
Okay,
so for whatever reason, 2020 wasn't held, perhaps because of the thing that's going on. I'm not even going to mention it. So in 2020, the Firefighter of the Year was Quinlan Parsons, and the Officer of the Year that year was Lieutenant Brittany Evans. And then for this last year, the Firefighter of the Year was Lieutenant Justin Graham, and Officer of the Year went to Captain Warren Kitteringham. Forgive me if I mispronounce that. They were at the meeting at the council meeting on Monday, and were honored there. They got their name on a plaque. And pictures with the mayor and the council there. So you can see that on the town's Facebook page. It's as part of a volunteer fire department, it's definitely something that we need. If perhaps this is where we should be sending people to get a better society, spend a year or two in a volunteer fire department or something like that. And there, yeah, you'll learn some discipline, some cool skills. I do have, in my previous life, I have a little bit of fire department experience. I'll leave that for another time. I appreciate it. Thank you for your service, your dedication, your volunteer spirit when it comes to this. This is where, this isn't something where you can just, I'll go in for 3 hours and hang out.
It's not a casual commitment.
No.
It is volunteering to the extreme.
Yeah. These people are always on call, and that's just when you see them most, I guess. It's the count. What I'm kind of getting to is it's the hours and training that just kind of go missed often.
Yeah, they do a weekly training session. Like there's a commitment beyond just showing up when there's an incident.
Yeah, but that's just weekly. But there's like other specialized courses on firefighting. I know they're involved in the medical side of things as well, as far as medical treatment and first aid response goes. So they cover a wide basis around here. Thank you to them, and we recognize your duties and sacrifices and volunteer work for this community. And then the show got started.
The real controversy.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was watching on the online feed, and you can just, everyone was like, "All right, here we go again with the chickens." So yeah, if you want to get caught up, we got a couple other podcasts going on with this. This has now been this last council meeting. The bylaw was brought back to council for second reading. And immediately the conversation went to concerns about the neighborhood acceptance form, I think they called it. It's the requirement in order to successfully apply for chickens and penhold, you have to get approval from your neighbors to your sides. The guy across the alley doesn't count. The guys on the side are the ones that matter. You had to get their signature to actually complete the application. And so when this was brought up, first of all, I asked some questions about this to council. And they seem to have taken some concern now regarding this. And so they discussed this for a while. And they seem to put this in place initially to try to appease kind of both sides of this issue.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a second. To try to appease both sides of this, we've got people for and against the chicken bylaw, though apparently 72% in the survey actually wanted it. So if you take that as kind of a poll or like a sample of Penhold, everyone was pulled or sampled, it gives you a good range of where things probably stand. So this seems to be a fairly popular position or popular bill, but they decide there's still some who were against it, and they want to try to appease them. And I think they, with those good intentions, though, I think they went in a very dangerous is may too strong of a term, but in that direction. Like, we're talking chickens, and now they're talking about basically taking away property rights.
Yeah, as minor as it may seem in just a chicken bylaw, that's a precedent that when applied broadly, it is dangerous. You're taking away a significant right. You're giving your rights to your neighbor.
Yes. And like, in what other realm is that happening? They did mention that there are some, like, if you have a secondary suite or a home business, you might have to inform your neighbors, but they don't have any kind of veto power. It just kind of is part of your application.
Yeah.
So, just here's a heads up what's happening, but it doesn't actually have any like I said, veto over whether or not you have a home business or a secondary suite. This one a step further. And fortunately, it seems councils recognize kind of their good intentions gone awry here. And they talked over a while to try to change the wording of it. They actually voted, there was actually a vote to scrap it altogether, But that was shot down 4-3 in a vote.
So just to scrap the veto power and
altogether, yeah, just get rid of that part of it. So yeah. That didn't pass on a 4-3 vote. So they, I think at this moment, they've changed the wording. Let me get my notes here. From must seek acceptance from neighbors on the forum to must inform neighbors. So you have to at least let your neighbors know you are having chickens. At least at this point, that's the stage that they're at, it seems. I don't know if they actually passed second reading or if they just amended it and they'll come back to second reading, or if it was all kind of passed as a package and then they'll see how it's worded
right
on the next time they come together for a possible third reading.
So that's just must inform your neighbor. Why write that in? That's just forcing you to be a good neighbor.
That's what it's kind of thing. It's almost, yeah, it's kind of legislating good neighborliness.
Yeah. What you would consider kind of common courtesy as a neighbor.
Yeah.
You're now legislating common courtesy. Something's a little odd about that.
Yeah. It seems like why it just, if it's not really going to impact the application process, then just scrap it.
Yeah.
Like I don't think this is actually beneficial to the bill at all. It doesn't actually change one's application and whether they'll be accepted or not. So it doesn't actually go towards whether or not your application is granted. And so why put it in there? Yeah, it does seem to be one of those good neighbor things. And this is just, perhaps this is, again, the government seeing a good thing and saying, okay, we'll make them do that good thing.
Yeah.
Of course you should let your neighbors know about it. Like, I think that's good courtesy, but I don't think it's good policy. It's not good. It's not a good bylaw policy.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I'll give them credit that they recognized it. I think it is at least better than it was. That your neighbors don't actually have control over your property, at least in this regard. But now here I want to start transitioning to our second story slowly. So it makes sense. And you don't think I'm too hyperbolic in this. So as part of the conversation around the bylaw, it was brought up by Councilor Mueller that it was easier to reduce restrictions later on than add more. So the conversation, you know, is have we made this process too difficult? And most councillors have been on board that they kind of want to put in a number of hoops. So people who really want to do it have to jump through them. And those who don't really want to, then they'll pass up on it. And then the veto is just one of those hoops. And yeah. So the question is, well, how can we get rid of this hoop for people? And his argument was, well, let's keep it in place just in case, you know, we get a mad rush of chicken applications. And that way we have better controls in place. And then if we find out like only a handful of people want chickens, we can then scale back the hoops, as it were.
Yeah.
And this seemed to get some traction, some agreement with other councillors, and certainly there seems to be at least initial reason to it. I think in many cases, you know, you kind of put up extra barriers just in case things go wrong. It's kind of like extra safety margin.
It sounds like good parenting practice. Maybe not good governing practice.
Maybe, yeah. So, like I say, there's a sense there's a nugget of reason, it seems, yeah, in there. A little safety margin, as it were. And who's going to argue with having more safety? But in this case, safety comes in the form of regulation, more government regulation. But how about we restate this? So the position was, we'll put more restrictions in place now, and then perhaps pull them back later if we don't need them. How about we restate that this way? It's easier to take freedom away now and then give it back later. I think that changes the perspective of that argument a little bit without, yep, I think, changing it.
Yeah, it really doesn't change the argument. You're still talking here, you're talking about your right or ability to have chickens, your freedom to use your property how you see fit. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it changes the argument.
No, but it certainly changes perhaps your kind of reaction to it.
Yeah.
It ends up, and I think just government in general has this tendency where it thinks it has the power to grant you freedom. Like you are allowed to do what we let you. When in fact, government is really kind of meant to be the other way around. Government is meant to be there to protect the freedom that you have already pre-government.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a right to free speech because the government says you have it. You have it because that is yours innately as a human being, as part of natural law, as part of divine law, if you go that way. Your right to property and its use is yours. And to restrict it, you have to, you can't just say we're going to restrict it because, you know, safety or because we want to appease this other side. You have to present a kind of a counter, or you have to present, I think, a more compelling case to trump that other right.
Yeah, you need to provide a justifiable reason for removing a freedom or a right, not start at a baseline of no freedoms and rights, and now the government will allow you whatever they see fit.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting at the bottom of no rights and saying, well, we will grant you this right, instead of starting at the top and saying, this is why we need to restrict this right and the rest remain.
Yeah. Yeah. And notice what's going on here. It's not even restricting freedom and your use of property on an actual threat or an actual issue. This is we're going to restrict your right to use your property just in case things could go wrong.
Yeah,
it's not even an actualized threat. Yeah. It's all it is there might be, and because there might be, we're going to put a little safety in here, and that safety is regulations as it's going to take away your freedom. Like I said, it sounds good if we're just talking about safety protection. But what's actually going on here is the removal of your freedom and your ability to use your property as you wish.
Yeah.
And if that's going to be the case, you better be presenting an actual justified reason for this and not merely this potential out there.
Yeah.
All right. So follow along here. So it's this idea that here in Penhold, this council actually proposed the possibility of taking or of giving other people rights over your property in some way.
Yeah.
I don't care how little it is. It's the fact that your rights have been taken away on the just for the mere possibility that people might get upset that you have chickens. Like that's the justification.
Yeah.
Though I'll give Walsh Councillor Walsh some credit here. He did mention like perhaps property values might be an issue. So if I have chickens, yes, does that decrease your property value? Let's just say that's true. You would have to at least show that as evidence.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's immediately true. Just because someone has chickens in the backyard, how much does that devalue?
Yeah,
I don't think that's an immediate connection between them. But then if you go in with that, then I think you've opened up the door to all sorts of different things. Like if what my neighbor does affects my property value, then I get to veto it.
Yeah. We've kind of like, discussed this before.
Yeah, you're just going to shut down anything.
It can go right down to things like
individual freedom,
like paint color on your house. You can go as far as that, because if somebody paints their house a whole bunch of random bright colors, you're going to have a harder time selling your house because people don't want to be a neighbor to that chaos, graffiti or whatever else you're doing. So yeah, you open up a Pandora's box kind of scenario where does this end?
Yeah. Yeah. Or at least you have to put in some significant threshold there.
Yeah.
And a direct assault on your property value. There has to be a large threshold for that even to come into the conversation. But at least they're thinking along those lines now. But the fact that it was that I don't know if they've quite grasped the third rail that they've touched with this. This is interesting because this is a third rail that the federal government is now touching. And we, a lot of people have recognized it at that level. So here, as is probably most of you know, throughout the news, and really this is getting commentary around the world. Like this is a worldwide reaction to this.
You've got people all over the States, all over Europe talking about what's happening in Canada right now.
Yeah. So this past week, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau enacted the Emergencies Act regarding in reaction to the protest that's going on in Ottawa, and particularly the truckers that have blocked up several streets in downtown Ottawa for the last 3 weeks. Now, no doubt you've heard a lot of kind of background or commentary on kind of what this means or whether people are for and against it. I just want to go through this. I think it's from a BBC article, and I think it really concisely highlights what this Emergency Act is and what kind of powers it gives and when it should actually be put in place.
And that's probably what's been missed in most of the reporting, is explaining the Emergencies Act itself.
Mm-hmm. I guess more particularly, like, what are the legitimate things that it can be applied to?
Yeah.
So the Emergencies Act was initially the War Measures Act, until it was changed in 1988. And it was meant to give the government additional powers in times of national crisis, according to this BBC article. Now, I'll just pause here just to make a comment. I wonder if Trudeau would have been so easily have invoked the Emergencies Act if it was still called the War Measures Act. It just seems so absurd to enact the War Measures Act on a blockade on a few streets in Ottawa. That's not a war. So why would you be putting the War Measures
Act? It's a lot easier to associate something, calling it an emergency, than a war measure.
The term emergency just gets passed around so frequently, especially nowadays. Like, many provinces have been in a state of emergency for the last 2 years.
Yeah, been in and out of it for the pandemic and then financial things going on. Like, I think in Alberta, we had it over crop issues this last summer. Mm. There was some kind of state of emergency put in place for that. Calling it an emergency. Okay. There's a lot of things that we class as an emergency, not a war, but an emergency.
That's right. Oh yeah. That's what I mean. We noticed that, we've had lots of emergency, but if you say we have a lot of wars, not so much for Canada, especially especially to the point of enacting a legislation against Canada or against Canadians to remove some of their civil rights. The BBC article continues that the situation must meet a high bar, specifically an urgent and critical situation that seriously endangers the lives, health, or safety of Canadians. So keep this in mind. This isn't something you put out for everyday situations. This is a legislation that's meant to be used in extreme scenarios, essentially.
Yeah.
So we got a really high bar. Like, essentially, this is kind of the nuclear bomb of legislation in Canada.
It's a last resort when you've got nothing else to throw at the situation. You pull this out.
Exactly. Yeah. So the article continues, and cabinet may only invoke the legislation, this is important, if the emergency cannot be addressed by any existing federal law, or if it exceeds the capacity of the provinces to handle it effectively. So it has to be this urgent and critical situation, threat to lives and safety of Canadians. And it has to be such a scenario in which there are no other laws in the book that could be applied to that situation. I don't know if I'm pretty sure there are other laws that could address semis being parked in the middle of a street.
Yeah.
Like, I know there is. There's especially in Alberta here, we got the critical infrastructure, or Critical Infrastructure Defense Act, I think, is here. But just the fact that there's traffic bylaws and provincial laws regarding use of roadways.
Yeah.
Like, all these things justify people being arrested for blocking the roadway.
So they already had the time. They already had the legislative power.
Yep.
To deal with this.
Yep. And they even had the manpower, because almost ironically is not the right word, but just kind of as a direct refutation of this emergency act. I think it was the day before it was enacted that the blockade in Windsor of the Ambassador Bridge was cleared.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
that was before the Emergencies Act. The ability to clear it.
Yeah. And that a blockade of that bridge might actually be, that would have, I think, would have provided you greater justification, because that's like threatening perhaps more economic issues and security
that's
at least had some semblance of reason.
That's the one that was what, like a quarter of Canadian import comes, 25% or
insane amount.
Yeah, huge percentage of our import comes on that route.
Yeah. But we're talking about, I think the last stats or the most recent ones I've seen were 300 plus vehicles and 150 odd protesters blocking up downtown Ottawa. Hardly a serious threat to Canadians. And certainly not one that other laws on the books could not handle. All right. So the emergency outline, or the Emergencies Act, also gives kind of the scenarios or the types of emergencies that have to be in place in order to legitimate or justify its use. And so, again, this article says that the Emergencies Act outlines four different types of emergencies: public welfare emergencies, public order emergencies, international emergencies, and war emergencies. If the legislation is invoked this week, and it was, it will likely be under the public order category. And so this is kind of what's being debated now in the legislature. Again, the criteria here is strict. Lawful protests do not qualify, the article says. And I even add that even unlawful protests don't qualify. Unlawful protests do not mean that the Emergencies Act can be enacted.
Right.
Remember, there's these other standards that have to be in place.
Yeah.
Now, remember, so we got public welfare, public order, international, and war emergencies. This isn't a public welfare one. This is more public health. Public order is probably the one that says it'll be enacted, because this isn't an international or a war emergency.
No.
So it has to be a public order emergency. That's probably the best category of these four. Now, this public order emergency itself has to be one of four different scenarios that are outlined in the Canadian Security Intelligence Service Act. So you go through, it has to be one of these types or four types of emergencies. Okay, let's go with public order emergency. And even under that public order emergency, there's only four types of those kind that can actually be applied. And so according to this law, or to the Canadian Security Intelligence Service Act, this law outlines four possible scenarios: espionage or sabotage, foreign influenced activities, threats or use of acts of serious violence for political, religious, or ideological objectives, covert unlawful acts intended to undermine or overthrow the constitutionally established government. Tell me which of the four that 300 parked vehicles on Ottawa streets can be categorized as one of those. Yeah, that's right. I think it's a lot of reaction. The next sentence, or the next paragraph in this article, says it is so far unclear which scenario Mr. Trudeau would rely on to justify the use of the Emergency Act. None of these four scenarios have been clearly present in Ontario. So even the BBC, which kind of has more of a leftist kind of spin on things or angle on things, is like, we don't know which one of these scenarios really justifies this act.
Yeah.
So that delays those. So like this isn't an act that you can throw out there whenever you're displeased or when you're annoyed by protesters or even when protests are unlawful. Like, yeah. Yes, I think these are unlawful protests in the sense that they are breaking the law when it comes to where they are to prohibiting use of roadways.
Yeah. But there's already laws in place to handle that. And that's the point here is that the Emergencies Act is supposed to go beyond what the current laws are capable of doing. And they've got laws capable of dealing with this.
Yes. So now with this law or with the Emergencies Act in place, now the federal government is now empowered to do such things as prohibit public gatherings and movement. So this law is meant to trump what are normally civil rights.
Yeah.
So, and it has certain defined. So now the Trudeau has 7 days to put a motion forward in Parliament, which has to pass both the House of Commons and Senate. So that's what they're doing right now, at least so as we're recording it. And then it's only good for 30 days after that. And then it automatically gets closed unless it's renewed. So it has it has fortunately built in time limits and constraints to it. Though we've seen what 2 weeks looks like in these last 2 years, who knows?
Yeah.
So fortunately that's built in, but it's built in because this bill or this legislation is so serious.
Like yeah.
You are trumping foundational Canadian or rights of Canadians.
Yeah.
When you enact this bill, this is what I mean. This is kind of the nuclear option when it comes to legislation. So it prohibits public gatherings and movement, or at least this is how it can be applied. It can freeze bank accounts, which we're seeing now.
Yep.
And then, as well, among other things, and particularly as it relates to this scenario, it now allows authorities to force or compel private businesses to help out the authorities. So tow truck drivers in particular, before they said, no, we're not going there. We're not touching that situation. It's not good for business. Now with this new authority, they are forced to comply on threat of fines and jail time. So this is a significant intrusion into those fundamental rights, and really in many cases property rights that we were kind of talking about. It freezes your bank account, which is one of the main ways we count property now.
Yeah.
And when I'm talking about property, I'm not necessarily talking about just land, you know, your money, your physical possessions, your businesses, and your freedom to use all those properties as you wish. These are now being trumped by this new Emergencies Act. Hopefully it's going to be limited, but hopefully it'll be limited to where they think it needs to be applied. Again, I don't think it needs to be acted in the first place. But again, kind of going back to what's going on in Penhole here, we need to be aware of what is being infringed upon here.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about your fundamental right to use your property as you wish. And I don't know if the property rights are viewed as highly as they really should be. We seem to put freedom of speech is up there, or freedom of protest and freedom of the press. These are like the super rights.
Yeah.
And then property rights are important, but they don't reach the kind of the upper threshold if we're doing one of those scales.
Yeah.
One of those chartings. But I think that does it's a disservice, but I think it highlights how little people actually understand or think about property rights and how significant they are. In fact, one article also goes on to mention that as serious as this law or as the Emergencies Act is, and as intrusive as it is to take over some fundamental rights, The headline in a National Post article says that 2/3 of Canadians support use of the Emergencies Act and want Freedom Convoy cleared out. I got to think that many of these people don't understand the Emergencies Act.
Yeah.
And the seriousness of it. And the seriousness of this legislation. Like this is a law like no other on the book. It also is concerning because of the precedents that get started when we're when we're talking about government. And so when this was enacted, Trudeau made very careful to say that this is going to be just used in a very targeted way. Primarily in Ottawa against those people at that time for this area. So he's trying to quell people, like, don't worry, it's not going to be everywhere. But I think he misses the point. I think he misses the point because you've triggered the kind of the nuclear legislation for a non-nuclear threat. And in when it comes to government, everyone's looking for precedent. Like,
yeah.
Now the next guy that comes along, well, now I can just point back to this guy and say, well, he did it because there's 300 people parked in front of Ottawa for 3 weeks.
As long as you have a comparable kind of scenario, you can justify enacting it again.
Yes. And then at that point, you know, government is always on the creep. Like that's how it is. It's always going to take more and more ground. It requires the citizens to stand up even when you say, okay, perhaps we want to get rid of this convoy. And if the Emergencies Act does that, then perhaps good, we'll speed it up this process. But you've missed the precedent that is set. You've missed the fact that fundamental freedoms are just overrun, in this small scenario. And then if they're overrun on this precedent in this small way, government creep is going to say it's going to be used on lesser issue for bigger purposes.
Yeah.
And that's a dangerous road to be traveling down. This is the tie-in. I think this is the tie-in I want to make between what's going on in Penhold here and this Emergencies Act. People are in uproar, at least more. Okay, I say that, and then yet 2/3 of the Canadians like this. But if you look at the commentary, and like I said, even worldwide commentary, there's like surprise, like, did you really do that? kind of response. Because everyone knows that this is a serious act to do, even if it's used on a limited basis. I lost my train of thought there. It's back to kind of comparing what's going on in Penhold here and this Emergencies Act. Is I don't know if either the Penhold Council or Trudeau really understands the significance of what he just did. Like you are trampling on property rights in a very unjustified manner.
Yeah.
And I don't know. My mind wants to speculate that perhaps that was made easier by the fact that we've seen 2 years of rights being infringed on without a clear demonstration of justification for that.
And minimal to no pushback. They got away with a lot of infringement on rights without the justification, and not a lot of people said anything.
Yeah, and then finally someone does, and
so you let it go.
And like the first clause of the Constitution says that these rights are guaranteed in a free society unless they can be and cannot be infringed upon unless it can be demonstrably justified in a reasonable democratic society or something to that line.
Yeah.
There has to be a demonstrated justification to it. And for the last 2 years, many places, many provinces have been ruled basically by, I think I was reading one commentary saying they were ruled by press conference. Like you found out what you were allowed to do because you saw the chief medical officer or the prime or premier telling you what you could do.
Yeah.
There's no legislation, or at least there, yes. There's no legislation required. They're doing so based upon kind of broad permission granted through other legislation, but there's very few checks and balances when it came to it. You had a council that met, and then the next day they told you what you were allowed or couldn't do. You know, they told you whether or not you could have that funeral for your friend, or whether or not you could go see grandma. Like those were the kind of decisions that were being made from the press, or from press conferences. I mention this because I think we need to be aware that any infringement on property on any of these fundamental rights, the government is required to demonstrate in a justified manner, or to demonstrate their justification for that. They can't just come out and say, we've convened, we've looked at the facts, you can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
That's not how this is supposed to work. This is not how the Constitution is set up. And it's not how natural law, like I said, I speak in from a position that goes beyond just the Constitution. If you infringe upon someone's rights, you better show us how an overriding moral good is trumping it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I have a right to drive my car, but then when a police officer comes and tries to take over the car, you better have a right and you better have a reason. You better be trying to perhaps like save someone's life when he does it, and not, you know, get back to the station before or in faster time or something like that. There has to be a cause or a greater justification to trump my rights to the property of my car. And sadly, I think over these 2 years, and the courts have not been very helpful at all. They really have been kind of rubber stamping, I think, a lot of these. And worth looking at some of the judges' rulings in BC, particularly, where they basically grant the benefit of the doubt to the chief medical officer.
Yeah.
The courts aren't pouring over all the scientific data or anything like that and saying, yes, we agree with the health minister, or the chief medical officer. They're just granting them benefit of the right or benefit of the doubt, perhaps for expediency. But that's not how this is meant to work.
Yeah.
And doing so, I think, reverses the scenario. It allows government to say, you have these rights if we give it to you. And so if we take it back, we're just taking back what's ours already.
Right.
Yeah. The onus has to be on the government to flip that around. We have the rights. They're ours as individuals. And if you take them away from us, you have to tell us why. And you have to be justified in telling us with that reasoning. And it just has not happened clearly for these last 2 years. And so when something like this with the Emergencies Act comes along and you really don't see any justification, particularly as the act itself is laid out, it's a concerning direction that these rulers and premiers and leaders are moving in. So whether it's here in Penhold or at the federal level, whenever fundamental rights are infringed upon, I think it's important that we don't overlook those or allow our governments to so easily slide those under or slide those through into legislation. Those are rights that are ours. And it's interesting, I was just thinking these two-thirds that they're in favor of this Emergencies Act. I don't think perhaps most of them don't understand how easily this can be flipped on them.
Yeah.
Like you might like this Emergencies Act because it's going against a convoy or a protest you don't like.
But take it out of the situation specifics and think about the rights being infringed and how you would react if those were your rights being infringed upon. Not the protesters in that scenario, but if there's some situation where you are on the opposite end of that Emergencies Act.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still okay with how quickly and somewhat lightly this act was enacted?
Yep. Yeah. So I think I've rambled on enough on this, but I think it was important to recognize that there's kind of an interesting connection between what's going on in Pendle here and the taking away of property rights. So this fundamental right and what's kind of going on in Ottawa. And notice that, you know, we are perhaps outraged or alert to one, and yet we kind of let this other one go because perhaps it's just a chicken bylaw.
Yeah. Who cares? Whatever. I don't care about the chickens, yeah. Whatever. But it's fundamentally a lot more significant. That's what I mean.
They touched a third rail, and we need to make sure they are aware of that, even if they aren't. And unfortunately, hopefully it seems like they are here now, made aware of it. Hopefully this federal government is aware of it. And hopefully we start to hear more justification and respect, or justification for taking away these rights and respect for the rights that Canadians actually have innately, natural law, divinely given rights. And perhaps let me just end on this. These rights, talk about rights is often, you know, I think can be presented in give me what's mine kind of yeah. situation. But what I'm talking about when I view rights, they come immediately with responsibility. So when you have a right to your property, that means you have control over it. So when we say someone can't steal from you, not only does it mean they can't take that possession away from you, but it also means that they can't control it. You possess that thing. You actually control that property. You control what you do with your money. You control what you do with your land, with your business.
Yeah.
And only in scenarios that are just demonstrably justified can those rights be infringed upon. But you have control over it. That means you have a responsibility to use that land, to use that money, to use that business in the way that you see is right. And so you have a responsibility. It's not just, you don't own something, I think, just for your own benefit. I think there's this notion that freedom just is, I do whatever I feel like I want to do, or I have this right, and so therefore I can do whatever I want to do. I don't think that's freedom. At least that's not the way I think of freedom. I think freedom to do what I ought to do is what I'm talking about. And so I need that freedom to do what I ought to do with my money or with my business or with my property. And so taking away that freedom or taking away property rights takes away that freedom that I have to do what I should be doing. And that's not something that should be done lightly. That's something that we need to be aware of. And we need to be aware of, if we're asking for these rights, we have responsibility for those things that we now own, that we now possess, that we mm-hmm. now use as they are intended. I think that is where I ended. I don't have anything light to light on to end on. I'll put an article up on Pendle Talk Radio and in our sources for a little bit of a lighter touch if you want to look at it. We'll save it for now. I think we've perhaps angered enough people or got a little high on our soapbox already. So I won't rag on another group of people here. But it'll be up there if you want to read the story. It has been making the rounds. It's kind of a fun story, especially if you're in the religious circles. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's a religious story, and kind of one of those in-house scenarios that only happens, like, I think, in religious era. It's just a uniquely religious scenario that's quite humorous. But I'll leave it there. I'll tease it there. But until next time, thank you for coming along with us, for hanging in there with us again, with me with my ramblings. Thank you. Perhaps we'll see you at DQ sometime soon. But hopefully. In the meantime, I am Brian Constein.
And I'm Michael Rowland.
And this has been Penhold Talk Radio.